Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 431.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm bringing you the first of 5 interviews that were done live at Psychotherapy Networker in March, and they are in audio and video format. I'm super excited to share them with you. Our first interview is with Courtney Armstrong. With over 25 years of experience, Courtney, who is a licensed professional counselor, is the founder of the Institute for Trauma-Informed Hypnotherapy. She's certified by the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, and she created a clinical hypnosis training program for the U.S. Veterans Administration and has trained countless clinicians globally. Courtney's best-selling books, Rethinking Trauma Treatment, The Therapeutic Aha, and Transforming Traumatic Grief, showcase her expertise in helping clients reclaim resilience after trauma. From national television to esteemed publications like the Psychotherapy Networker, where she was also a speaker this year and in the past, she's a go-to expert for clinical hypnosis and trauma-focused clinical hypnosis is what we were talking about today. She is unraveling the mysteries of hypnosis, demystifying what it is, and giving some really clear, concrete examples of how she uses it in her work. It's something that I've always been a little bit uncertain about and uncomfortable with, but after talking with Courtney, I feel much more interested in including clinical hypnosis in my practice too. And in the show notes, you'll find a link to a partner page where the PESI and Psychotherapy Networker offerings that Courtney has for training in clinical hypnosis are there at a discounted price. So if you're a therapist who's considering learning more about clinical hypnosis, especially if you're a trauma therapist who would like to use this in a trauma-informed way, I highly recommend you check out that link in the show notes. Let's get right into my conversation with the interesting and fun and super knowledgeable Courtney Armstrong. Welcome back to Therapy Chat Live at Psychotherapy Networker. And with me is Courtney Armstrong, LPC. Hi, Courtney.
Hello.
It's so lovely to have you here with me in person.
I know. I'm so excited. I've been following Laura ever since the beginning.
Really?
Yes.
How'd you even find out about it? I'm like, how do you even know about this?
I don't remember. But I mean, I just remember seeing, like, I thought, oh, that looks really good. Because there wasn't, like, Guy McPherson has that. But there wasn't really a podcast for therapists. You and Guy were the first that I was aware of. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
For being a longtime listener. That's just so cool.
Yeah,
to find out about that. So
you're one of the speakers here at Psychotherapy Networker.
Yeah.
So like I asked Ariel in my last interview, what have you been doing here before we get into what we're really talking about? What have you been doing so far?
Well, what I did today is I went to Being Your Authentic Self as a Therapist by Kirsten Linden Seal led that. And it was also an ethics workshop. And it was so good because we talked about just real life stuff. Like we didn't get a set of rules. We talked about the gray areas, all of those areas, like with boundaries and things where you have to make these decisions and it's not always clear what to do. So it was just really helpful to help us think through some of these things together. And yeah, it was really good.
That is awesome. There's so many great talks here. And I am like wishing that I could be in that. I've been busy working, trying to figure this stuff out for hours. So, you know, but I'll watch the recordings. But yeah, and I think being your authentic self as a therapist is so hard because we feel like we have to be a certain way.
Yes.
You know?
It's true. Yeah. You know, I remember I started out working with kids. Mm-hmm. So I went to graduate school in New Orleans. And I worked with kids in the schools then. And because I worked with kids, I was a little more authentic. Yeah. I mean, I would dance with them. I mean, we would, you know, and then when
you let yourself be goofy, let yourself embarrass yourself, then it gives them permission to be themselves.
That's so true. That's what I would be goofy. And that, I was non-threatening completely.
Yeah.
You know, and they would open up to me. But then when I started working in psych hospitals, I felt like I had to be more buttoned up, and not so goofy. And you know, it wasn't until, it may have actually kind of what I think we're going to talk about today in my hypnosis training helped me really get back in touch with just being real and being a human, you know, that not being so self-conscious about every single word I said or not crying, you know, like I work with trauma like you. And I remember, I think this was where that actually turned. And I realized it's okay to be authentic. As I had a family that I worked with and something very tragic happened in that family when the children was killed. And when they told me, I mean, I immediately just, my face flushed and tears, you know, started. I mean, I wasn't boohooing like sobbing, but I mean, I couldn't hold back the tears. And the mom told me, the fact that you're crying makes me love you even more. She said that because you're real. And so, yeah.
Well, yeah. And if you hadn't just been like,
stoic.
Oh, well, let's begin our session, you know, they'd be like, what's wrong with her?
I know, exactly. It would have been, And so, I mean, that's attunement, right? And what it was, if I recall, probably apologized. I think that's probably what made her say, the fact that you're shedding a tear actually makes me feel safer with you.
Yes.
I think I apologized. I said, I'm sorry, because I thought, I don't want to be here for you. But anyway.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some of the reasons that people have negative experiences with therapy is where the therapist is so distant, keeping the client at such length that it feels, for one thing, I think it can feel reminiscent of our experiences of a parent that wasn't emotionally available to us. So then, you know, there's one in therapy for that reason. And then the therapist is doing the same thing to them and being seeming like disapproving and judgmental.
Right.
Who wants that?
Exactly.
Pay for that? No thanks.
I know. Because like you and Ariel were talking about, of course, I do my own therapy too. And I did. The first therapist I had was amazing. I loved her. And that's what got me into the field. I changed my major. I was just like, I love this. And it helped me so much. And then I went back at another time when I was living in a different state for therapy. And this therapist was super smart, but I felt it just did not feel warm. It was very, she used a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy, but it was very much like, well, let's look at the, you know, let's let's analyze that thought. You know, it wasn't.
It's a thought distortion.
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, what I do now, where I go out of my way. And I was just like, it makes total sense that you would feel that way. Exactly. It makes total sense to me that you would have that thought. Of course that thought popped up. And yet you recognize it's not been your best advantage. So maybe we can look at some ways, like when that thought shows up, how you can, you know, accept it, but redirect it in a way that's more helpful.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that hard to do to say that, you know.
Right. I know. I think, you know, I was thinking about the person before.
Yeah.
Like, I am the expert. You come to me with your problems and I'll tell you how to fix them. You know, and it's like, but then I don't want to work harder than you. I got to do your job. Like, there's so many things that we do.
Yes.
So,
oh my gosh. Yes. Right.
So messed up in ways that, but I think that therapists, you know, just to have compassion, it's therapists' own fear of not, maybe they don't feel with their authentic self is lovable enough to bring into therapy, you know?
Yeah, and that's true.
Certainly had that journey myself.
Yeah, you're bringing up such a good point. I mean, that even came up a bit in the workshop today. I don't know that we talked about it. We talked about it in our small group, but there's a thing now that you might see on social media with women say, like, we can't do anything right, you know, and even in the Barbie movie, you know, they had this song about it. America, what's her name? But she sang a song.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. Like, you know, so be perfect, but not too perfect, you know,
oh, yeah.
Be confident, but not too confident. Or I feel like we go through that so much as a therapist. Be open, be warm, be authentic, but not too authentic. You
right.
know,
don't tear up.
Yeah. So I feel like it's, I have compassion for all of us because I feel like we're constantly self-monitoring all of those things. And I think at this point, I've been a therapist for 25 years. I've found, you know, I'm feeling that balance. So it doesn't feel like I have to be so self-conscious all the time, but you're constantly having to recalibrate it for different situations. So
we have a hard job. We have a hard job.
Yeah.
Did you see that thing that was going around Facebook where it was talking about what we are really doing as a therapist? It was like how we bring our presence. We sit with people's pain just as a compassionate witness and like bring ourself and hold something.
Yes.
Those are the things that's not the, you know, DBT skills or the, you know, hypnosis skills. It's the presence that you bring that is really doing the work.
It's true. So one of the books I wrote was Rethinking Trauma Treatment. And I talk about it's attachment and memory consolidation and resilience. And so I think that's in the 21st century, that's the pieces that we're really attuning to now that we didn't attune to in terms of attachment. So I talk a lot about the best way to help somebody heal attachment is their earned secure attachment with you, and it's going to just happen naturally. And what I talk about is when I started asking people more consciously, what about, is what we're doing helpful to you? What are you finding helpful? And they didn't say that hypnosis or the EMDR. They said, how you treated me. Like they didn't know it was a technique. But more than the technique, it was how you treated me, that you believed me, that you one of my clients who was diagnosed with borderline personality and bipolar disorder. I mean, she had like so many diagnoses. She had been to so many therapists. And she said, I'll never forget this. She said that you didn't ask me to change my mind too quickly. That you would just put something out there. And if I was like resistant to it, you would say, okay, you know, I get why you would not be ready to. One of the things was she wasn't, when we did some trauma reprocessing work, she was, her father and mother had both been horribly physically and emotionally abusive to her and her siblings. Her father had passed away and he did apologize on his deathbed. So she was able to do the work around that relationship, the abuse from him. I mean, it still was intense, But she got there and she did great with that. And then when we went to do it around her mom, we started and she said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to stop being mad at her. I don't want to stop being angry.
Take that away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her mom was still alive. So she still needed those boundaries, you know, like part the anger was holding her in power with mom. And I said, I get it. So what I'm hearing is that's important. You know, that's a way that you're holding your power. And what you'd like to do is not let it bleed into other relationships. Like that anger gets triggered. Like your subconscious, yeah, so to speak, or your emotional brain is a lot of times what I call it, instead of your subconscious, can confuse similar and same. So she was getting triggered, you know, and she was, you know, in some same-sex relationships, and she was getting triggered when sometimes in those relationships, things would happen that reminded her of stuff with her mom. And then she would realize, wait, I was projecting that.
Yeah.
My partner didn't mean it that way. Why can't I? So that's what we, so we want to just maybe help that part of your mind begin to differentiate.
Yeah.
You know, so you cannot be triggered like that, but you can still be as mad as at your mom as you want to be, as long as you want to be. And she's like, I can do that. And then over time, one day she just walked in my office. I mean, it was many months, but she walked in my office one day. She goes, I think I'm ready to move past this stuff in my mom. Like, I just don't want to feel, I want to be indifferent. Like, I want to be in this place where I can say, you know, she's really messed up. And I don't want to take any of that personally. I can still set boundaries with her, but I don't need to carry this around. But, you know, she said it was, so she said, what helped me the most in our work together was that you didn't ask me to change my mind too quickly.
Yeah.
And just were willing to, and you say, I get it.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a really important point about, I always, as a therapist, I always ask myself, well, do I think my therapist knows me better than I know myself? No.
True.
Even though there are many things that my therapist points out to me that I wasn't realizing, and I greatly appreciate that, but, you know, I'm going to balk if I feel that you're telling me now what you need to do is, you know,
that's like,
no, I'm telling you what I came here to do. That's my style, but, you know,
well,
we're all the expert in our own lives.
I know. I do think we have to trust when the client, like what's so-called resistance, which I think most of us are on the same page. You know, when I do classes, I'll tell people, if you're encountering resistance, it's their boundary. It's disagreement. It's just disagreement with something that you're suggesting. And you want to explore what that's about and respect it. Like, it doesn't, you know, not, you got to negotiate. That's not.
Look at your own relationship to power and control as a therapist.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I am so curious to ask you a whole bunch of stuff about clinical hypnosis, but
yeah,
I just first want to ask you here at the Networker, I know you're doing two talks. What are your talks?
I'm doing Breaking Habits with Hypnosis on Saturday. Okay. And then on Sunday, I'm doing Awakening Positive Emotional States. And we got a huge turnout for that. And there's still like space because they put me in a bigger room. And I'm so happy that we got so many people wanting to do it, because that is one of the things I learned from hypnosis, that my traditional therapy taught me more about how to go into the problem and the pain.
Yeah.
And I got really good at being able to do that. But then I got some training in hypnosis, and hypnosis emphasizes redirecting the person's attention to how they want to feel. And when what I had a harsh teacher, I had several teachers in hypnosis, but one of my teachers was harsh. And so what hypnosis is, is when you get, it's just highly focused, absorbed attention. So when you just get really absorbed into something to the point that you can tune out other things. So we go in and out all the time. It's a natural state. So you can get really absorbed in a good movie or book where you jump at the scary part, or you're feeling everything the character's feeling, you cry. You know, that's that absorbed kind of state. And so when we're in, you know, a post-trauma reaction or super angry, anxious, it's actually a form of trance, because you're in that, you're so absorbed in that moment or emotion that you've blocked out awareness of other things. So I had a harsh teacher that when I was so empathic in our role plays, he was like, you are staying too long in the pain. He's like, you are making it worse for people. And I was like, this is what I was taught to do. And he's like, and so he could have, I'm a gentler teacher.
Yeah.
But I will never.
His delivery was.
Yeah. But otherwise he had a good point that I didn't realize. But what I, so when I learned in hypnosis that I teach people in a gentler way is you do have to attune with it. You can't jump to the desired thing too quickly, because then they feel like you just missed what they told you. You just missed their pain and you didn't.
Spiritual bypass.
Yes. So you have to first go, oh my goodness. And you really have to connect and you have to understand it from their perspective. And then you gently lead towards. So I call it attune, lift, and lead is my little way to remember it. Attune, lift, and lead. So you attune with what someone's telling you, and you spend as long as you need to in that until they feel like you get it. And you'll know, because they'll lean in closer. They'll nod with you. Like there's this sense like you get it, and this sense of attunement. And then I like to bring in some, bring their awareness to a strength they have. So let's do a role play.
Okay.
I may, for a demo. Yeah. Maybe putting myself, I might screw this up, but let's see what we can do. So just role play somebody and just bring, like you're bringing something in frustrating or upsetting or.
Okay. Well, I mean, this isn't a role play.
Yeah.
This would be just something that's real.
Yeah.
Well, let's say like earlier, when I was feeling really worried about the tech not working.
Yeah.
And I was like getting to the point where I was just kind of like, just can't do this. Like it's not going to work. You know?
Right. Right. He's all of that worry and wanting to do a good job and all of that. And
yes.
So in that moment, it sounds like you had like just feeling all of this tension in here and then just. Even difficulty probably thinking, because
I was flooding. Having a hard time thinking. Well, like I hit a wall in my executive functioning.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm not going to be able to figure this out. I was a little bit embarrassed that the people who were trying to help me were seeing that I couldn't figure it out. And then I was just like, this is gonna work. No, so I'm just really discouraged and worried and.
Right.
And kind of almost like hopeless. Not that it was like despair, but just like
the disappointment. Yeah. And so it sounds like, so there was this disappointment because you really wanted to be able to, this was a new thing, but a cool thing.
Yeah. I was excited about doing it. I wanted it to be
fun.
I didn't have a super big expectation of how it was going to turn out. I just wanted it to be fun,
interesting,
creative.
Yeah.
For the guest and for me and for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pressure. Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody in the world is watching.
Judging me.
Yeah. So there have been that moment of frustration, disappointment, worry. And then you recognize at some point in there, I'm guessing, like, okay, you had some people come in, Ariel and
Linda tied.
Linda.
Helped me get grounded.
Yeah. And then we're able to kind of get, because that grounding helped you to kind of settle that. Like Dan Siegel says, we flip our lid, our emotional brain. Yeah. So when we can get grounded like that, then it gets our lid back on and we can think more clearly. And they probably reassured you like, look, even if it doesn't work, we'll figure it out. You know, maybe we won't be able to do it today, but maybe we'll get it fixed for tomorrow. You know, like we'll work with it. And then now recognizing that you've from the beginning, you were doing podcasts before most people and had to figure out all kinds of technical stuff.
That's true.
And so you more than...
I'll tell you what happened. Ariel said, you are what people like about you is that you show up as your authentic self.
Yeah.
And you don't, she said, you don't worry about it being perfect. I was like, well, I'm trying for it to be perfect, but in my, my vision of perfection is, good enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she reminded me of my kind of like who I am and that I do this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in that moment, it sounds like realizing like, yeah. And even if you come on live and you're like, I'm a mess, this thing isn't working, we might go off the air, I don't know what's going to happen, that everybody would actually just love that because that's why we watch you anyway, because you just keep it real. And even though that still wouldn't have been like, what you want.
My expectation, yeah. But it would have been okay.
It would have been okay, yeah. Yeah. So that's a little bit of what an attune, lift, and lead is like. Hypnosis can be conversational. It's more about how you... So hypnosis is all about attention and where you focus your attention. So what I learned to do is... First, attune, because you really need to understand all the pieces of this thing in order to effectively guide somebody to where they want to be, and they need to feel like you get it. So, but in the other part of me is wanting to be tuned, fully present. At the same time, another part of my mind I'm trying to think about, where do I want to take Laura with this? What do I want her to realize about herself? Kind of like what Ariel did.
Yeah.
So that this experience, now when you look back on it, it's different already. It's mm-hmm. not like, oh, there was this moment and then this is what happened and I got through it and I realized it's going to be okay. Even if this happens again, it won't be as distressing because now you have a different way of even thinking about if I encounter a challenge like that, I'll keep it real and muddle through and use my resources and my friends around me. So tell me what you're noticing about that.
Well, I mean, as I think about that experience, I'm like, it was a bad moment. It was literally, it's a moment. I don't know, maybe like 5 minutes total of feeling like incapable.
Yeah.
And then I was a bit embarrassed that I was letting them know that I was struggling, but they were so kind about it. And I'm like, they care about me, I'm okay. Not alone. And I think that was, I was feeling like, felt like this big spotlight was on me. And I was like being shown as like a failure or something.
Yeah.
And, so what? Like we all know how to do things sometimes. I've never done it before, but
yeah.
Yeah, so it just doesn't feel as, there's a very big part of me right now that's like, I'm fun, man. I can do this.
Yeah.
I'll be able to figure it out next time. And, just doesn't seem like a big deal now, but it definitely did then. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I love about this kind of work is it's a way of, when the person's ready, there's a time and a place for starting. That's why I call it attune, lift, and lead, because first I'm going to attune and lift, which is tune while also bringing someone's attention to their strengths. Because when you get entranced in that panic in the moment or with any situation or that worry or distress, then we block out awareness of our resources.
Yeah. It's like tunnel vision.
Yeah. And that's what trance is. You get in tunnel vision. So we're going to break that trance and put you in a good trance, which is like, so what I'm paying attention to is like, where's her attention getting caught and how can I gently kind of expand her mind's attention to what else she pulled in there to get through this. So I'm tracking like where your attention's going. So I know where I need to redirect it. And so that you can start it. And then when you start doing that with people, then it feels really natural. It was like, well, yeah, that all came like, it doesn't feel like you're in some, okay, let me do some hypnosis on you, Laura. It's not that. It's really just noticing where somebody's attention is and then gently, you know, bringing their awareness to some strengths and redirecting it to, sometimes it's redirecting you to the now and the power you have in the now. Sometimes I'm redirecting it to future, like knowing, bringing their awareness to strengths, knowing that more and more you are finding your way. And here's how I'm seeing you 3 months from now. Or what would you want? How do you want 3 months from now to feel when you're looking back on this? Or maybe a year. But then people start thinking forward and they start thinking, oh, I've never thought about that, you know? And it doesn't mean it's a Pollyanna thing. So I'm not trying to get people to visualize, you have a perfect car and a house and a, you know,
I have millions of dollars.
Yes.
Swimming in money.
Right. Yeah. It's not like some crazy, like the secret manifestation stuff.
Yeah.
It's more about, so, you know, I'm seeing you, wow, I'm seeing you taking this experience and being able to find, after having gone through it, you're even more confident in the future, that things don't rattle you as much, or you are able to help others when they're feeling that way because you remember what helped you. So you're able to use that experience in ways that help you and other people. And so they tell them the story and being able to laugh about it. So that's how I might paint future you, you know, this real practical, you know.
Yeah.
But,
well, so yeah, I mean, that's not kind of what I thought it would be like. And I'm curious, like, one of the things that you were talking about is envisioning that future you.
Yeah.
And so I was going to give you an example from my life where, and there was a place. So, you know, I started Trauma Therapist Network
in
2021. And it was, the idea was to be a directory to find a trauma therapist. That was the original plan. Now it's a community and a directory. I remember it was going to launch on August 2nd. And I was doing a podcast interview in July. And I mean, I was beside myself. I was so anxious. I mean, it wasn't just anxious. I was like, I was going between jumping out of my skin, anxiety, and like despair and hopelessness. Like just thinking, this is not something that I can do. Like, why would anyone want this? Why would anyone want to buy this from me? Why? Who am I to do this? And, you know, even though I had an idea, the idea made sense. It made sense for me to offer it because it came from people who were contacting me through therapy chat saying, how do I find a therapist like the people?
Yes,
so I was like, I need a way to help people when they ask me that.
Yeah.
And what I was doing was spending hours looking up for people on other directories, someone where they live, because I really want people to find.
I think it's
the help they're looking for. Thank you.
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marich, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marich is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy. sometimes it's the small actions we take that make big differences in our lives. Noticing glimmers can make such a change in my mood to say, what else is here? And I can always notice other things that give me that little positive spark in my life, and they kind of stitch together in the day to change my whole outlook. One small change that has big benefits is taking care of your gut health to support whole body well-being. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I like taking Seed because it's portable, it doesn't have to be refrigerated, it's easy to incorporate into my daily routine, and it makes me feel better just knowing I'm taking it. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living. Code 25LIVING.
And it's like part of the creative process is that, fear.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is like, it doesn't exist. I mean, directories existed.
Yeah.
But this didn't exist. And I couldn't see it. Like, I just couldn't feel what it would be like. And so it was as if my system was like, you can't do that because you've never done that. So therefore, your thought that you're going to do this is a big mistake because, there's no evidence that that is possible for you. It wasn't just like that it's possible. Obviously, it's possible.
Yeah.
But it felt like, but not for me.
Okay.
So you were talking about like that, and I feel like what you're talking about is kind of like an experience of that future.
Yes. Yes.
That I think that could have been so helpful to me at the time, because even though people would be like, well, just imagine yourself and it's already done and it's how it's going to be.
You are so right.
But I couldn't get there.
Gosh, that is such a brilliant insight that you just shared. I mean, really, it's subtle, but so important that if you don't have, and that's so much of what that future, we call it age progression in hypnosis, but it's like the future template, the future self. But like when you show your brain, like what it could look like, that it tells the brain, oh, that's possible.
Yeah.
And in the beginning with something like that, it is hard to even visualize. So I will say sometimes it's hard, and that's where us as therapists have to sometimes help the person figure out what future self would look like. Like when I've worked with people and why do I keep repeating this relationship pattern? And they don't know what a healthy relationship, so they can't visualize themselves in a healthy relationship.
Right.
Because so
we can look back and say, well, I don't like how this kept being like that.
You can,
but we can't look forward and say what it would be like if it was different.
Yeah. So how do they know? Like, so one of my mentors, Michael Yapko, he asked, how do you know what a healthy relationship, what would it look like? And people are like, when they really start thinking about it, like, I'm not sure. Or they say stuff that we know as therapists is too idealistic.
Yeah.
So you as a therapist have to make what we call in hypnosis suggestions. But again, you don't have to put some money in. Now, I will talk about formal hypnosis, where first I do conversational things that I've learned from hypnosis. And then I'll say, would you like for me to show you a tool that could really deepen your connection to that awareness, that experience, or that strength? And usually the person will go, yes, please.
And I definitely want that.
So I think clinical hypnosis can be really helpful for you. Or I can show you a self-hypnosis tool, actually. Now, there are times I don't call it hypnosis because it doesn't seem necessary. I just call it a guided imagery or guided, because they're very similar things. But then we can deepen it and deepen your connection, where you can call that up anytime you need it. So there is a place to do more formal, but just so you all can think, you can do this immediately, even after thinking about it this way. So when I'm helping somebody with future self, going back to that. And so, for example, one of my clients that I thought about sharing her story and how hypnosis helped her was she kept getting into really codependent relationships. She knew it tracked back to her childhood and growing up with her father didn't abuse her, but abused mom. And she was the person in the family who could calm Dad down. So she...
Oh, I know that one. That's a tough role in the family.
Yeah.
So, my gosh, the responsibility.
Yes. So she had the message that we discovered through doing hypnosis. I'll tell you how we can use hypnosis for that piece later. But she realized she had this core belief. If I alter me, I can change him. Meaning if I do what they want and do what makes them happy and change me, it changes them. And you know what? That was true in her family.
Experience.
So her emotional brain was not changing. She's like, I've been to all of this. I've been to other therapists. I've been to Al-Anon. Why do I keep getting into these? And I said, because your emotional brain, it worked. And until your emotional brain has a new experience, it's not going to believe it. I could tell you all day long, logically, all the things to do, but your emotional brain is going to be like, well, that's not in my reality. So I'm not doing that differently. So what we did first, so first we need to show your emotional brain what that would look like how you can still be caring, but with boundaries. So let's think about what a healthy relationship. And honestly, guys, I don't always know. I mean, it's very collaborative. I'm like, let's just start thinking like, and so I think about, so to be attracted to someone who can laugh at things you say, because she did have a good sense, that gets your sense of humor, that's friendly, that's respectful. If you say, if you say, I don't really want to do this today, and they don't take it personally, they're like, okay. That you could get into even, a disagreement with. And in the moment, you both feeling really frustrated, but then at some point being able to say, you know what, I get where you're coming from. And, sometimes being able to understand your point of view and say, okay, I see why that upset you. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I did that. Or being able to say, right now, we just need to stop and agree to disagree, but let's come back when we're calmer and can work this out. So I would just describe, here's what it looks like. It's not like you find the man or of your dreams.
Right.
He's
in finance. He's in finance.
Yeah.
He drives a Lamborghini.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard those.
Yeah, those
checklists many times.
Yeah, just visualize your ideal mate. And it was like the ideal mate and like these external things. It's like what qualities. So I asked her, like, do you want him to have a sense of humor? Do you want him to, like, do you want somebody that's cool? Like, if, y'all just sit on the couch in your pajamas and watch movies together. You don't have to put on makeup. You don't want somebody. So we together, like, just thought of just real, like, where you feel actually seen, comfortable, cared about. And so we, so.
Seems hard if the emotional brain's like,
Yeah. And so I said, so let's imagine you being drawn to someone like that. And them being drawn to you because they want somebody like that too. They don't want, like, they're not looking for a supermodel, or they're just looking for somebody they can be themselves with too. So let's for a moment imagine what that would be like. And so she never had that experience. She had glimpses of it enough that we could just imagine what that would be like and just visualize it for a moment. And so then I'd invited her just to close her eyes. Again, we didn't do like, so in a moment, we're going to do hypnosis and get this schema in your brain. I just said, so just close your eyes and just for a moment, let yourself imagine what, just make up like somebody that might fit that description. And she thought of I see his face and I can't think of his name. It was a guy in the movies. It wasn't Jack Black, but it was somebody like that. It's just kind of like goofy, but. And she's like, I never thought about, but she goes, I've probably like somebody like that, or just, I could really have a good time and just be comfortable with them. So she, but like, it was getting her in that moment. So all hypnosis is absorbed attention. So I invited her to just absorb herself and just imagining what that would be like. And I mentioned like little details she might notice and things she might feel. It's very sensory. So what you might see, hear, feel, smell even. you could smell, you know, pizza while you're watching the movie, and he likes the same toppings you like, you know. And she's just like, and so she had somebody, I can't think of the actor's name, but she had this person come to mind, and she goes, something like that. She goes, I've never really thought about that. So in that moment, we showed her emotional brain a new template, a new blueprint. It went, oh, somebody like that? Yeah, I probably wouldn't have to do all that stuff I had to do for my dad and these other. Like, yeah, that's no wonder. I've been looking at for the wrong stuff. So that was the first step. And then, you know, we did some other things, but that's how I use hypnosis. It's not like, you know, I just say, you know, close your eyes, I'm going to say these magic words to you. It's very collaborative.
Every time you hear a bell, yeah, well, run around the block three times.
It's, and then we can attach it. So even when I'm using it to somebody who has panic attacks, and so I'll ask, how do you want to be able to respond in that moment? Because as we know, as therapists, the first step actually in stopping panic attacks is not trying to go, oh God,
I'll fight it.
Yeah. It's to say, okay, my heart's beating really fast right now. I'm having trouble breathing. It is, you know, my body's just reacting, and actually movement will help. I know this from having my own panic attacks. All the things I learned, I like to tell my clients, all the things I learned in therapy school about calming a panic attack did not work because I couldn't deep breathe in that moment. I was hyperventilating. Yes. So what actually worked was movement. When I had one of them myself, I go, what do I feel like I need to do in this moment? Like, what does my body want from me? And it said, just move. I need to move. And that was actually the most helpful thing. I needed to just kind of walk and burn that adrenaline off. And so that's a whole separate story. Where I might start is, how do you want to be able to respond in that moment if you feel like the first early twinge? Because if we can catch it there, that's when you have the best opportunity to kind of manage where that's going. And so I had one guy, and he would have them while driving, and he's like, you know, the first thing I notice is my heart, the palpitations. And then I start worrying, oh gosh, I'm going to have this and lose control. And then I'm going to lose control of my car. So I said, so to feel like, even though this is happening, what do I notice I have control over in this moment? And he's like, I can feel, we explore, like I said, can you feel your hands on the steering wheel? Can you feel like a foot you get can ground you? And he's like, yes, that, like, something kinesthetic works. I'm like, so just feeling that you can, and then tune in. And he was a musician, so you can tune into the music on your radio. Like, we want to, the more you attune to, oh no, what's going on? Your heart's going to go, is there a problem? Let me give you more adrenaline. So the more we can reattune your mind to the present moment and stuff that's non-threatening, it's going to help your system kind of recalibrate down. So we found things. He's like, feeling my hands on the wheel, my left foot just pressing into the floor while my right foot can be comfortably on the gas, and listening to noticing what songs on the radio, and just trying to figure out what notes. Because the more, again, it has to do with attention, the more you can absorb. If he has to notice what notes he thinks are in that song, all of a sudden his mind's got to divert. His working memory has to go deeper into that. And it crowds out the worrisome thoughts, because your working memory can only hold 40 bits of information simultaneously. So if you have to suddenly just get really absorbed and focused on the details on something, it can actually move your attention away from the panic into that. So together we had to figure that out. Like, I didn't just say, why don't you notice the notes? I said, what can you notice in the music that would really pull you in? He's like, I could try to figure out what notes that guitar is playing. I was like, okay, I didn't know.
That seems really hard. I would never think of that. So, I mean, I would be like, oh, I like this song, or can I sing along, or rhythm, but yeah.
So yours would be different.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing with hypnosis. You could get a canned script, and I do start people off with scripts just to get the feel of it. Like, when I'm teaching therapists how to do it, scripts help you kind of get the rhythm and how to use the words in a way that helps people relax. But if I'm trying to create, I personalize it. So if you said, well, I would start singing along, then that's what we would do for you. So when you feel that, you can start to tune into that music, start singing along and notice, you know, what else could you notice in that moment that would be something that would signal like something neutral or pleasant that you could refocus your attention on. And then, so I collaborate with the person to figure out what would work for them. And then I would say, so would you like for me to show you a tool that you can use to help you access that more clearly? Because I'll say, even as we're doing, I'll say, what are you noticing to, as we together look for these things you could refocus on? And they'll say, I notice I'm already feeling calmer. I'm like, so that tells me your mind's responding to that. So would you like for me to get your mind to anchor that more? And that's when I'll say, so in that, you know, so just close your eyes. I might do a little, what we call an induction in hypnosis, just to get them in the zone a little more. And then have them, first I'd have them recall all the things they want. What's desired first, anchor there first, because that gives people the foothold. And the belief it's possible.
She's giving us a masterclass
here. Yeah. Right. And then I'll say, now that you've got it, I'll say, how do you want to anchor that in your body? You can give yourself a word. You can give yourself a gesture, you know, and I can't remember what this client said. He's very auditory. So he had a word, I think. I think it was just peace. Peace. I said, okay, so as you think peace, just anchor that in. Notice how you feel, how to pull that up. And then I'll say, so now what we're going to do is we're going to pair it with the trigger, because we got it. So what we know from memory reconsolidation, your brain won't change that trigger, that neural network, until you introduce a new experience. So I'll say, so now we're going to rewind the movie, see yourself get in the car. He would have these focus on a particular road. And there were some reasons for that I won't get into. And I said, so see yourself driving down that road. And then the heart does a little flip, and that's your cue, like, okay, heart, I got you. It's going to be okay. This is a different day, different time of year. Feel my hands on the wheel. Notice what song's playing on the radio. Start trying to figure out what notes that guitar player's playing. And think, peace, I got this. You know, and then I just had him and just keep doing that until you can tell me it's coming down. So we're doing this as he's closing his eyes. And then he's like, yeah, he'd signal. I said, just nod when you got it. And he's like, yeah. I was like, let's do it again. Because I teach people your emotional brain, or what we call your subconscious, the subcortical part of your brain that controls all those emotional responses, thinks like an animal. It only learns through experience, association, and repetition. It doesn't learn through verbal logic. So I learned more, Laura, from training my dog and hanging out with my toddler nephews about the emotional brain. Because if you want to know how your emotional brain works, just hang out with the animals and toddlers.
I look at my pets all the time and think about like our nervous system states, because I see them, you know, reacting to mine and theirs.
And you think, what do I need to do to help them calm down? It's not giving them a lecture on how to reframe their thoughts.
The dog.
Yeah. It's, I've got to redirect their attention to something that would help them get or soothe, something soothing and calming. So I teach my clients that it's just that animal part of your brain. Sometimes I'll say, I work a lot with veterans. I'll say it's your inner German shepherd.
Mm.
And he's just on high alert right now, trying to protect you. And you just want to go, it's okay, buddy. This isn't a threat. This isn't real. So you create an experience. So with the hypnosis, first we created that desired experience, and then we associated it then with the trigger. So now the brain goes, oh, when this happens, this is another option for me. Instead of getting stuck in the loop, the cycle, here's another option. I can go here. And then we repeated it a few times to just lock it in a little more. And it doesn't mean he walked out of the office that day like, I'm good, thank you. I was like, you're going to have to repeat it. And yeah. You're in the moment. But mentally rehearse it. Do what we did. This is a self-hypnosis technique. Keep reminding your, showing your mind, here's what I'm going to do. Here's a new strategy. I'm going to just, even if it's for 2 seconds, just see yourself doing that. When you get in the car, before you even start the car, see yourself. If this happens, here's what I'm going to do. And so then he did it. Like, it took some repetition and it just got better and better. So that's how I use hypnosis. It's to help teach people how to redirect your mind to access, to create new experiences and to redirect your attention and access new experiences that help your mind learn a new pattern.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That was such a great explanation. And I mean, I do feel like for everyone who watches this, like, just learn how to do, whether you want to work with your own panic attacks or if you're a therapist wanting to use this in your practice. But you teach people in much more depth how to do this.
Yeah.
So I know some of, we'll have some of your like PESI stuff linked with this when it goes out. And, but is that what, like, what do you have?
Yeah. So what I've done with PESI, you can like get some shorter, like 2 or 3 hour things that they've recorded that I've done over the years here at the Networker that, like, let's say I did one last year on hypnosis for pain. Because it is very helpful in reducing pain, getting pain relief. It literally is anti-inflammatory. Just doing hypnosis is anti-inflammatory.
Oh.
So it will decrease inflammation and help you soothe your nervous system. But so there's the shorter ones. And then I did an all-day one that PESI has as an online option. But I'm doing a live online one again on June 7th. So if you want to join me for a whole day workshop, and we'll go deeper. And then if you like it and you're like, I'm digging this, I wanted it some more, I do an 8-week. So it's a hybrid program where you'll watch some online parts and videos, but they're short clips. So you can watch them in like 15-minute increments. And then we meet 2 hours a week for over 8 weeks where I'll answer your questions and do some demos, and then we practice. Because it's the practice, it's you practicing it. And we do small group practice and practicing it with each other. And this is everybody's favorite part, because you get hypnosis every week from your peers. And everybody in the beginning, they're like, I'm so nervous about practicing. And I am too. Like, even when I go to trainings, I get nervous. And I've been doing this for years. But when I get in these small groups and after practice, so I have empathy and I tell everybody, it's okay. I know initially you'll think, oh no, but we are not here to grade you. We have coaches, trained therapists that will sit in with you for support and guidance and the small group. And then what ends up happening about the third week, everybody's like, they can't wait to get to it because everybody leaves feeling better. And,
nice.
And that's the thing I loved about doing hypnosis, Laura, is my clients that I didn't do with every single client. I mean, there's some clients that they wouldn't be interested. So I'm not going to push it on anybody if they don't want to do it. But the clients who did do it, they would leave my office feeling better. And they would say, I just leave here feeling better every time. And I first started doing hypnosis back in 2003. And I worked in a primary care physician's office. It was an integrative medicine center. And before I learned hypnosis, and, you know, I specialize in working with trauma. So people would say, everybody that comes out of Courtney's office is crying. After I started learning hypnosis, they're like, Courtney, now everybody's coming out of your office, like looking so chill and laughing. I mean, what are y'all doing in there? You know, and I was like, you know, but it's a cool tool and it will enhance. You can integrate it with EMDR, IFS, any of the other tools. It's a tool you can use just to enhance other things that you're doing.
So cool. And it's your enthusiasm for it is very obvious too.
Yeah.
And so that makes it
very
appealing. And I'd like to learn too. And I love how you just said it, and you had said it before we were talking, that people can integrate this in with whatever way they practice. They don't have to be a certain type of therapist to be able to integrate clinical hypnosis.
Yeah. Cause sometimes just learning that little attune, lift, and lead, and how to do that part and how to kind of transit. You could do conversational stuff like that and never do the formal stuff. And it still helps you, you know, like, so people, we have people that just want to do more of that. And then we have people that want to take it a little bit further, you know, where you can do deeper work with people with it.
Beautiful. Well, I have loved this conversation.
Me
and
too.
I'm so glad that we've been able to do it and grateful for what you shared and taught me, and I'm sure everyone who watches this. And I have two questions I need to ask before we wrap up.
Yeah.
So these are questions that Pessy wanted us to ask. So first of all, what advice do you have for new therapists?
Wow. Well, I think what we started with is it's okay for you to be real. And if you find yourself shedding a tear because someone, I mean, I think you can always just say, you know, excuse me, I just feeling, you know, some compassion for what you're going through. And you know, but know that people are, our clients are also very forgiving. So, I mean, even if you feel like you shared too much or showed too much of yourself, just know that actually that really makes you human. You know, I think there's a place for boundaries around that, but I just want you to focus more on being a fellow human being and being that presence Laura talked about. That is to this day what all my clients, they, even though they love the hypnosis, they still tell me it's how you treated me.
Yeah.
Was what they felt helped. And like you had a second question.
About that, I just want to add one little point.
Yeah.
You know, do you know Mona Delva?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's so wonderful. And she teaches about parenting children, you know, brain body parenting. She says, it's not what you say, it's how you are.
Yes.
You know, so it's not just what we're doing, it's how people feel when they're with us.
That's exactly right.
So meaningful. I hear that from clients too. It's like, it's your presence. And that's a hard thing to even put into words.
It is.
You know? Okay. And then the second question is, what are the signs that someone should go to therapy? Big question.
I think for me, I'll just say, since we're talking personally, like I know, I mean, of course, there's obvious things. Like if you are feeling a lot of anxiety or burnout or depression symptoms, I think a lot of us are tuned into that. But I think what I want to speak to is just like what you and Ariel were talking through, like sometimes when you recognize something you want to develop more within yourself or grow more within yourself, like even I have a happy marriage. I'm so blessed. I found a great partner for me. But we were in therapy last year for the first time. I wanted to go because I'm a therapist and I'm a therapy junkie. And but he didn't want to do it. And so when I asked him, and the reason I wanted to go is because we're in a different stage in our life. He just retired and I'm still working a lot. And there was just some other changes. He had some health issues that were unexpected. So we just had some different things going on. And I was understanding him on a different level. And I felt like he didn't know how to articulate his feelings. I mean, I'm a therapist. And so when we would try to have conversations, he just couldn't even articulate all these things he was feeling. Anyway, long story short.
The hard part about being married to a therapist or being in a relationship with a therapist when we're so emotionally verbal and people aren't that way.
Yes. And what I was realizing in myself is I was contributing to that.
Mm-hmm.
And where I thought I was being helpful, I realized, you know what, I keep getting in the way of letting him find his way. And maybe it's my issue. So I went to my own therapist first before we did that couple. I said, you know, because he's like, why didn't he want to spend it? No, I don't want to do it. So I was like, okay, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. Hello, Taylor Swift. So I went to a therapist who did my own work first on just what, and I got in touch with a whole new level that I didn't even know I was capable. I thought I had analyzed myself from six ways to Sunday. And I don't know. It wasn't like I learned something new about myself. I think I just learned something new about I want to be in relationship differently. Mm-hmm. I need to shift my role. I'd gotten a little too caregiving, and I realized he doesn't ask me to be in that role. So it was more like when you realize, like, just a new area of growth you recognize for yourself. And I think
that's a great example. And it's like you wanted you two to go to couples therapy so much.
Yep.
You wanted it so much.
Yes, right.
He was like, why?
I know. I was like, we're good.
So you go to your own therapy because you're the one that wants something so much that you can't get. Why?
Yeah.
Is that bothering you so much? And that's where, you know, I think it's a really good point that in a relationship, if you feel like you really want your partner to change, that's a good time for you to go to your
own
therapy.
It's so true. Because just me doing that, we know this is therapist, uh-huh. but I hadn't really walked the walk. I have to say, until I did that.
But he really did need it to.
And then it did. Like, I was so much calmer and just, like, accepting him. And he, a few months later, asked, he goes, maybe I do need it. I was like, oh, it worked.
It worked. But that wasn't really the goal.
That wasn't my goal. Like, if you go into it thinking, well, I'm...
How can I make him do what I want to do?
Yeah, that is not going to work.
Don't do it like
that. Yeah. Well, Courtney, thanks.
Thank you so much. And what's your website?
Oh, yeah. So I have two, but trauma-informed hypnotherapy is the one where you can learn about. But before that one, my regular website was Real World Therapy, because that's what people always said. You're like real world therapy. I mean, like, you just make it make sense. Yeah. You know? So I called my practice, you know, what
I think that's
was
cool.
Real world therapy. And so I still have that website. I don't see clients anymore because right now I'm teaching and doing trainings for the VA and I can't have a caseload, but I still have a lot of my stuff up there for therapists too that I've written about.
Oh, great. So there's a lot of information on both realworldtherapy.com and trauma-informed hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your
time. It was so fun. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're really so welcome.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.